Hello and welcome to Kitchen Curiosity. I'm your host, Radford Chancellor. And for the 10th episode of the show, we're back up in the big smoke, recording in our studio at Canary Wharf. And for this episode, we've got a slightly different format. First of all, I'm going to be interviewing the Director General of CEDA, the Catering Equipment Distributors Association. And then second part of the show, I'm going to be joined from some members of the CEDA Academy. Now, Adam Mason has been promoting and supporting trade associations in the UK and overseas for over 25 years. But since 2014, he's been the Director General of CEDA, and he's overseen some huge cultural changes. He's prospered a huge growth in membership and launched some pioneer services and also the CEDA Academy. Adam, welcome to the show. How's your day been so far?
Thanks very much, Radford. Yeah, I'm really pleased to be here. Day's been good, busy, lots going on. Quick congratulations on the podcast and success of it so far. It's been really good listen and welcome thing for the industry. So yeah, happy to be here.
Perfect. Thank you. That's really kind of you to say. I think you know the guests of the last show asked the guests of the next show the first question. And we had Cyrus Tollywodder OBE on. You know him?
Yeah, I know Cyrus well. Nice guy, really nice guy, and always very supportive of CEDA and members and what we're doing. So, yeah, I think happy to field a question from Cyrus. I'm sure he's gone easy on me. Yes.
So his question was, obviously to your distributors and also maybe your distributors, partners, manufacturers, the wider industry, I guess, but as you're one of the leaders in the sector, are the distributors, manufacturers looking at kit that's more multifunctional, so that it works across a sort of multiple cuisines?
I think they are, and they have been. And I think it's fair to say there have been some significant strides made in this regard in recent years, responding predominantly to smaller kitchen footprints, but also to skills challenges being faced in the hospitality commercial kitchen sector. We have a partner scheme at CEDA for manufacturers, and part of what that seeks to do is deliver a greater dialogue through the supply chain. So we want the supply chain to be and become more collaborative, more communicative. And I think that a strong focus on that, as well as now, but moving forward, and probably as well, Radford, the involvement of more end users, more operators, more consultants in the conversation will actually help to drive that kind of communication and collaboration that we're looking for, which I think brings benefits to everybody. So yes, it happens. Yes, it should happen more.
Yeah, definitely. I think, well, you're right. I think it's finding out what the industry needs, not what maybe we think they need, I suppose.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
To kick us off, is there something a little different for our listeners? You can tell our listeners. So maybe like two truths about yourself and one lie, and I'll try and guess one or the other. Just a bit of fun to start us.
Okay. Sport has played a big part of my life and continues to, more kind of watching and spectating and supporting now than obviously playing and participating. So yeah, it's got a bit of a sporting theme. So as a result of sporting endeavours, I've broken my nose 8 times.
Wow.
That's number one. Number two, I've played rugby in 6 out of the 7 continents around the world. And number three, I have shares in several racehorses. So there's my three to you.
I'm going to go with the first two with the truth. I can actually believe you do play rugby. You look like a rugby man to me. And 8 times a lot of times. Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. Is that right? Or
so you're going for the lie being the racehorses?
Yes.
Okay, and that's not right. So I have shares in a few racehorses. I have broken my nose 8 times as a result of sport. And I've only played rugby in 4 out of the 7 continents, not 6.
Still quite impressive.
it was a long time ago. Enjoyable times, happy days.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your career and how you came into CEDA in 2014. What drove that?
I'd been working in trade associations in the furniture and interiors sector for about 15 years. And reached a bit of a crossroads in terms of my happiness and satisfaction in that sector. So I actually took the opportunity to leave and start working for myself, still within the sector, but working for a number of businesses as a consultant, predominantly on international trade.
Okay.
It's fair to say that was stopped rather swiftly. Very swift conversation with my wife with the arrival of my beautiful daughter around that time. My wife wanted me home more and wanted me in a more secure working environment, which I understand and get. So I wanted a challenge. I wanted an opportunity to make a difference on an industry level. I knew the association world. I didn't know the commercial kitchen or hospitality world very well at all, but was delighted to be offered the job as Director General of CEDA following the recruitment process. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was back in 2014, and we're still here a decade on. So I've enjoyed it. I hope other people have enjoyed it too along the way. So that led me to the sector, and I was advised very early on, it's one that once you get involved in, it's very difficult to leave. And I think I've seen that with every year that's passed. I've seen the truth of that.
Definitely. I mean, as we'll talk obviously more about CEDA and some of the things that you've been instrumental in and the CEDA Academy and stuff. But can you kind of share with our listeners the sort of what a typical day looks like for you as Director General? I think the equipment associations are they're a big part of our sector, but maybe we don't know how much they play and how important they are. Some people don't know.
Yeah, I think the beauty for me is the variety, and literally no 2 days are the same. So there isn't a typical day, and that's what I enjoy. I think the scale of what my members deliver every day and the support, therefore, that they and their people require is quite extensive. And so whether it's technical support, whether it's training or learning, education and development, our apprenticeship program, whether it's representing the industry to end users and operators, representing the industry to the supply chain and manufacturers, or representing the industry to government bodies, regulatory bodies, legislative bodies, meeting with members, listening to members, sales, wanting to recruit more members, marketing, promoting both ourselves as an association, but also the industry more broadly, both to end users and operators, but also to its future workforce. It means that, and of course you add to that the necessary requirements of running a business, mean that it's just always interesting. It's always challenging. It's always constantly evolving. But I will always champion the role that trade associations play across every sector of business. They're fundamental, and they're so important. And I've been working within them for 25 years. So I would say that, wouldn't I? But they can and do deliver real change, real positive change. And that's what I enjoy so much about it, is that we are not influencing a business. We're not influencing people. We're influencing an entire industry. And when you get it right, and when you deliver real positive change that you know affects hundreds of businesses and thousands of people, it's really satisfying. So sadly, I can't give you a day in the life of, because it is very so varied. Varied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. And I think, you're right. I don't know if it's even more so now in this new era that we've come into since sort of 2020, if you like. It's even more important that our industry's connected. We're working together. I know a lot of us are competitors and things, but still being able to achieve the better, wider goal, I suppose, the bigger picture.
Yeah, I think that was the environment I walked into 10 years ago, was, you know, a very competitive environment, to its detriment almost. Competition is great. Competition is hugely important. It makes people better. It makes people push on and look for innovation, and that's great. But at a sector level, the realization that I think the evolution that we've been on is if we collaborate and if we communicate on the big picture things that affect everybody, then commensurately the industry will be better and the industry will grow. And if you're involved in that process, commensurately your part within that industry will grow as well. And that's been, a nice sea change to implement. And every day, more and more people and more businesses kind of get that and see the benefits of it. So, yeah, I think you're right. Now more than ever, certainly in our sector, we're able to do that and also see the benefits of that.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, it's fair to say you've had quite an impressive career to date. What would you say sort of the pinnacle change you've witnessed in our sector in the last 10 years?
Oh, specifically our sector. I mean, it's genuinely a fascinating sector. And I feel lucky and fortunate to have worked in other sectors as well, so that I can truly appreciate how interesting our sector and our part of the world is. It's just constantly evolving. It's totally dynamic in terms of what the industry looks like and what challenges therefore that provides. I mean, even in 10 years, the changes have been really quite significant. You know, going back further than that, you know, 52 years ago, CEDA was created, and it was an industry of companies that bought and sold pots, pans, knives, forks, and spoons. Okay. And because of their entrepreneurial nature and their inability to say no to a customer, that evolved into heavy equipment. And that then evolved into, yeah, of course I can sketch out a kitchen project for you, which then evolved into, oh, you need someone to maintain your kitchen. Yeah, of course I can do that. And therefore you've got businesses that are, you know, set up to deliver one thing, now designing, project managing and delivering multi-million pound catering projects, still with the same people at the helm. And that to me is absolutely fascinating. And the fact they've had to put, you know, professional management structures in place and learn so much about how to deliver projects or how to deliver maintenance contracts or just deliver for their customers is absolutely fascinating. So the pinnacle changes have just been the ongoing evolution and dynamism of it. And how do we as an association respond to that to try and get ahead of the curve to deliver the support and service and solution that our members and the wider industry needs?
Yeah. Okay. That's fantastic. I mean, you've touched a bit about, obviously we've talked a bit about CEDA, but can you just sort of explain why should customers use a CEDA member, do you feel, for a distributor?
I think there's a couple of reasons. I mean, I think that we have within our membership, you know, what we consider to be the best companies in the industry. Why do we consider that? Because there is an application process to it. It's not a fait accompli that you fill in a form, you pay a subscription, and therefore you are able to be a part of CEDA and use our logo and promote yourself as a CEDA member. So there's actual criteria in place in terms of, you know, employing engineers and technicians with the right skills and the relevant skills to carry out the jobs that they're undertaking around financial security and stability of the business, around adherence to a code of practice that we have, which tells us that our members are going to operate in what we consider to be the correct and appropriate manner to stand apart from the rest of the industry. And then secondly, I think the support that we deliver to members means that they have access to, you know, the very latest technical documentation to ensure that they're doing it right and their understanding of the regulation and legislation that's required in order to deliver it. The training that we offer from, you know, designers through project managers, through sales staff, through engineers, means that they are the best practice versions of that job role. And so there's a piece of that should come with a peace of mind and a confidence to the end user, the operator, the customer, that they are being serviced by a business that does things the right way, and a business that isn't here today, gone tomorrow, a business that they can build a long-term and long-lasting relationship with. So they would be my two particular points. They're best prepared, best armed to deliver the best possible service to their customers.
Yeah, definitely. I think, it's really important, isn't it, that continuous professional development, whether it's individually or as a business. And if you're a standalone company, how do you get that? But obviously, I know your members get a lot of access to lots of things, be conference, academy, and all the resources you offer. So, yeah, it shows they're professional companies and they're serious about what they're doing.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, going back, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years to why were guilds set up in this country, you know, and the process to become a member of a guild was arduous. And you can liken it to, you know, doing the knowledge as a cab driver, where you have to study for 4 years in order to be able to do it. You're not going to do that if it's a whim, if you're just going to be here today, gone tomorrow. You invest that in showing to your customer base that you are absolutely committed to delivering absolute quality in terms of performance and in terms of service. So, yeah, it's really important. It's something that we need to bang about more than we do, perhaps, and that's something that we will focus on moving forward.
So, as you know, the second part of this show, I've got guests from the Cedar Academy, which you kindly arranged for me. Can you, as we get on, let's get on to that bit, but tell me about the Academy and why it's important to you professionally and personally as well.
Yeah, so the Academy, over the 10 years I've been involved in Cedar, probably of all the things that we've delivered, I think the Academy probably gives me greatest satisfaction and pride. So the Academy is a group of individuals, typically under the age of 30, but that's not necessarily a hard and fast rule. Young people, relatively young people within our industry. And they come together and get together to build a network within their industry of, yes, absolutely competitors. But as I said earlier, this has been a part of the evolution of breaking down those competitive barriers and stirring dialogue for the benefit of everybody. So they build their network. It's looking to grow their confidence. It's looking to deliver knowledge to enhance them within their careers. It seeks to build retention for our members. Mm-hmm. If an individual member of staff is given opportunities to be part of things like the Cedar Academy, I think it augurs well for retention rates of staff as well. So seven and a half years ago, I think we formed the Academy, and it was basically delivered due to a lack of any form of recognition, championing, engagement of young people in our sector, which I think I noticed and identified quite quickly and quite early on, and was very conscious that we had to do something about it. Why? Because the heartbeat of and lifeblood of any sector, of any industry, is the sustainability of the people within it. It's definitely thinking about tomorrow, the leaders of tomorrow, the workers of tomorrow, the managers of tomorrow. Where are they going to come from? And in order for that to be a positive experience, we need to engage with them now to understand how they tick, understand what their aspirations for the sector are, start listening to them, and start recognizing and championing them. So we started off with a very small group. There was probably 10 or 11 sat around the table the first time we got together, and we kind of handed the ball to them and said, this is your group. You know, it's not going to be something that's dictated to by Cedar in terms of the agenda that you want. We're here to listen, and we're here to facilitate what it is that you want as individuals, but also as a collective group. So what we've seen over that period of time, with the slight hiatus of COVID, which was a challenging couple of years for the Academy specifically, but what we've seen that evolve into is a group of 50 individuals. Wow. The beauty of the Academy is that they come from all different job roles within the industry. So we have designers, we have project managers, we have sales staff, we have estimators, we have engineers, we have marketeers, we have commercial-minded people, we have support staff and administration staff. And they get together to talk about their challenges within the industry, the opportunities that the industry has, We go on trips, both within the UK, to visit manufacturers, to learn, yes, about the equipment and what it does, but to learn about the manufacturing process and the logistics processes behind what gets that sheet of stainless steel and turns it into whatever it may become. And that they are then either designing into a kitchen or selling as a piece of like-for-like replacement equipment. We've also enjoyed this year our first overseas trip, where we went over to Germany to visit the MKN and Hupfer factories, their global headquarters. They were really well looked after over the 3 days. And again, just immersing them in the wider industry, taking them out of their day-to-day bubble, where they may be sat at a desk designing or in a van going from site to site, fixing and servicing and repairing. What's the bigger picture behind this? What's the bigger picture behind what they as individuals do? And yeah, it, as I say, it's been a big success in terms of numbers and growth, but in terms of the quality of outputs and what it's delivering for people and what we're delivering for the individuals, but also their employers, is really quite significant. And we've got some big plans in place moving forward for the Academy as well, which I'll no doubt leave you to
investigate. Don't steal all my thunder. But that's really fantastic. And I look forward to speaking to the three people on the next part of the show.
They're great guys. They're really good guys amongst a really good group. So I've no doubt you'll enjoy it.
My final question. Now, obviously, this is the first time we've departed. We normally have a chef guest, but as was promised, we're going to be talking to other industry leaders, such as trade association directors and things. So, but I thought I'd leave it in. I don't know if you cook at home, but I'm going to ask you it anyhow. Let me see how we get on. So you're hosting a dinner party for three people, three famous people, or they don't have to be famous, dead or alive. Who would you invite? What would the menu be? And you don't have to cook it. You know, you could always get it in, I suppose.
So. Well, I'm not bad in the kitchen. I have my staples and A, what I like, but also B, what's within my capability.
Yeah.
So in terms of dinner party guests, I've gone for a gentleman called Rory Sutherland, who's a marketing guru and behavioral economist, who I just find fascinating in terms of the way he thinks and the way he communicates his thinking and the way he understands the human mind and the psychology behind it. If you don't know him, I'd advise have a Google, have a look and see some of the podcasts Rory. That he does. Rory Sutherland.
Okay.
He works at Ogilvy. Incredibly fascinating guy. I've spent a long time reading his books, listening to his works, and I think he'd be a fascinating guest. Secondly, the late great Gene Wilder, who played Willy Wonka in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which is my favourite film as a child growing up, and has continued to be fascinated by his world, his characters, and also some of his other films as well. So Gene Wilder would have to be there. And then on a sporting field, it's not really my sport, but it's a sporting character that fascinated me and has done and continues to, despite his sad and untimely passing. But the great Australian leg spinner, Shane Warne. I don't know a lot about cricket, but just him as a competitor and a character and a personality, again, fascinating and would sit and listen to happily.
Yeah. And then what kind of menu would you put together? What's this? Have you thought about that? So,
yeah, quite simple, quite a lot of pre-prep. So I'm not away from the table too much. We're going for a starter, fruit de mer. I love my seafood.
Lovely.
So something that could be prepared during the day and left in the fridge on ice. That's the starter. And then again, probably keeping on the French theme, we're going steak, frites and roasted garlic, which
lovely.
Which again, I think will not take too long to bung the frites in the fryer and leave the steak on for a minute or two. Mm-hmm. roasting the garlic is the only one which takes a bit of time. So I think we'll enjoy that. I think it will help to fuel the conversation. No doubt there'll be several bottles sunk with it as well.
And
that would be an enjoyable evening for me at least.
Well, I think you did well. You know, you're not a chef, but there's good answers. I was expecting a rugby personality, so you took me by surprise.
Yeah, again, a lot of... I was fortunate enough to kind of play with and against sporting heroes or rugby heroes. So they don't quite make the cut, given that I've spent time in their company before. All these three would be absolutely brand new to me. And I think that would add to the fascination of the evening.
True. Okay. Well, Adam, thank you so much for being part of this part of the podcast. Hope you've enjoyed, and thank you for giving me your time.
It's been a pleasure, Radford, a real pleasure. And as I say, congratulations on the current success, and I wish you ongoing success with it as well. It's a really good thing for the sector. Anything that helps to positively promote and discuss and bring to life the sector gets an absolute thumbs up from me.
Yeah, thank you. And we've not to blow our own trumpets, but we're getting, you know, good listener rates, and I think 39 countries now, and... trying to educate people, because I think a lot of people don't even know what our sector's doing.
That's the big challenge. And I hope not to affect those negatively in terms of statistics and listener rates.
No, I'm sure you won't. So we're going to say goodbye now to Adam Mason, and we'll take a short break. And then we're going to be joined by three guests who all form part of the Cedar Academy, along with their other 47 colleagues in the Academy. And we'll get some real-life insight into the food service equipment sector, the working relationship with that and the Cedar Academy.
Cedar is a trade association of more than 140 companies, all of whom are specialists in design, kitchen projects and equipment for the food service, catering and hospitality industry. Our members are made up of the most professional, innovative and creative minds in the industry. Cedar promotes an atmosphere of enterprise, innovation and fair competition, where members operate ethically, encourage excellence and strive for improved standards in both their businesses and the wider industry.
And now I'm joined by three guests. We've got the director, Claire Smith, and senior designer, Katie Nuttall, both from ABDA Design, and the team leader, Justin Ring, from Grout Brothers Food Service Equipment. All three of these individuals are actively involved in the Cedar Academy and the day-to-day workings. Claire Smith, the director of ABDA Designs, has spent her entire career working in hospitality and is passionate about the importance of creating incredible hospitality experiences. Someone who started a family business and worked her way up through the sector, various roles in hospitality design, before taking over a director level at the company she works at. Welcome to the show, to Claire. It's your birthday.
Yes, it is. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for coming along on your birthday. I hope you've had a good day so far.
Lovely, thank you, with these great people. Yep.
So tell us a bit about your work now and your involvement in the Cedar Academy.
So ABDA as a business, we've been kind of going since the mid-90s. We are predominantly interior design specialists, but we have a back of house team as well, for which Kate heads up. And we'll come on to that a little bit more later. We've been Cedar members for a number of years and have had involvement with the Academy since it first started, with some of our kind of previous staff members being involved. But more recently, since Kate joined the business earlier this year, we have a heavier involvement with the Academy.
Right, okay. And you're actively involved, or you're starting to get involved in the Academy, and you're now
my first board meeting next week, right, in the hopes of becoming one of the directors at Cedar as well. So I'm looking forward to that. So we'll see how that progresses over the next few weeks.
Good luck with that. I hope that goes well. We'll come on a bit more about the Cedar Academy as we talk to the guests. But now my next guest on the panel is Katie Nuttall, and she's the senior designer at ABDA Design. And she's just been given her first Bachelor's Interior Design degree. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And she's been working in our sector for 11 years and is actively involved in the Cedar Academy since 2021. She's also the senior leader in the Academy. She's got a range of experience in the sector, including high-level hotels, Michelin-star restaurants, education institutes, covering anything from airports to garden centres. Katie, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
How did you get into the industry? And can you tell me a little bit about the academy and why it first grabbed your attention?
Yeah, so as I finished college when I was 18, I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do, what my career path was going to be. So I decided to take a year or so, maybe that was the original plan, to just work a bit, decide what I wanted to do. So I joined Vision Commercial Kitchens at 18 as an apprentice admin.
Okay.
Admin apprentice.
Yeah.
And from there, I kind of worked in a range of different departments really early on, like design, like getting involved in design and seeing what they were up to. And within the first maybe 3 months of me being at Vision, the head of design was leaving. And so I, as a little 18-year-old, went to the directors and said to them, I'd love to be in design. Could I move over?
And
yeah,
ambitious, just
kind of went for it. And they were really supportive. Went from trainee to designer like within the year, and ever since have just loved it. So I've kind of gone a bit of a backwards route because I've started working, found what I've loved, which is design, and then done my education afterwards. So after COVID, I decided to do an interior design diploma as well, just to like broaden my knowledge more. And then using like a range of my experience and the diploma, I then got onto a top-up degree in interior design, which meant I only had to do the final year of my degree effectively.
Okay.
So I did that last year I did that. And yeah, I graduated on Wednesday with a first class. So
yeah, I saw that on LinkedIn. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's quite an achievement.
Yeah. So it's been amazing. It's been really good to really like solidify my career path and where I want to go, and then be able to kind of get the formal qualifications to support that.
Yeah.
And now that I'm at ABDA, I'm able to use like the 11 years experience of my commercial kitchen design and pair it with the interior design as well.
So you're doing both?
Yeah, doing both. Okay. Yeah.
Which is really good.
Yeah, good, really, really interesting. And
Absolutely,
I know everybody says it, but no day is the same, especially not doing both like back of house and front of house. Like, there's such a range of projects and skills that you need to have, which is great. So I got into the academy 2021. A colleague of mine when I was in at Vision was in the academy from kind of when it first came about, really. There, at that time, there was only a handful of members.
Okay.
And he was a chair in the academy. And I found that really like aspirational, motivational. Like, he went to loads of events, did a lot of talks. And I was just really keen to see like what the wider industry is about, because typically, unless you're kind of at a director level,
you're hidden away.
Yeah, you're hidden. You're just kind of behind a desk. So it's really good to have the opportunity to really get out there, like learn from loads of people with loads of experience and a complete like range of knowledge. So yeah, when there was a gap in the academy, I pitched myself. I said, can I come into the academy? They obviously welcomed me with
so there's limited arms. Numbers then within the academy. You have to apply if you like, or
it was more I had to at Vision, I had to check that I could I was eligible to go into the academy. But nowadays, so at that time, the academy was quite limited on numbers, whereas now we kind of welcome everyone and we're really keen on growing our numbers and the diversity within the academy. So.
Okay, perfect. Well, we'll hear more about that. And the final guest on this part of the podcast is Justin Ring. He's the team leader at Grout Brothers for the service team.
First division, yep.
First division. And he started as a trainee commercial engineer 11 years ago. He was loving the sector and obviously still in it. And now he's worked his way up to a senior position and oversees all aspects of Grout Brothers food service equipment service division. Justin's day-to-day work consisted predominantly being on the tools, repairing, maintaining and installing, and also overseeing the engineers for the sector. Justin, welcome to the show. You've achieved quite a lot already as a young man. What's your connection to the academy, and can you tell us a fun fact about yourself? Yeah, to kick us off.
Thank you for that introduction. I'm not sure I live up to that hype. being honest, before joining Cedar, I had no idea what or who Cedar was when it was first pitched to me.
Okay.
My first group meeting, I remember, was at the Belfry in 2022. I remember sitting down and we're doing the introductions around the table.
Yeah.
And it was going around and I was feeling major imposter syndrome. And I was thinking, wow, I'm really part of something bigger here. And then also thinking and panicking of what am I going to say when it gets to me?
Right.
My interesting fact is 11 years into my job, I still have family members telling everyone I can still fix their domestic boiler.
Yeah, they probably don't even know what.
No.
Yeah.
Countless face calls.
Yeah, I get that. So, Kate, how's the Academy helped you both professionally and personally? And how did you become a senior leader within the Academy?
So professionally, it's really just opened up all the opportunities out there and just kind of shows that you can go any direction that you want to within the industry.
Okay.
I think it's quite rare in any industry where you can really shape the industry yourself. And in the Academy, we're really able to say our thoughts and feelings and where we want the industry to go.
So typically, do you meet like every month or how does that all work? How does the mechanics of it work?
So it's been quite fluid in the past and a bit more relaxed. So prior to the senior leadership team being formed, we would probably meet up twice a year, maybe like three times a year. Okay. We'd have a meeting.
Yeah.
And it was mainly like training on our behalf rather than us actively working towards goals. Whereas as the Academy has grown, we're at 50 members now.
50?
Just over 50, actually, I think. Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's loads of us now.
I don't think people even know that. I mean, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like when I joined, I think there was maybe like 15 of us, and it's in just the past year, it's grown astronomically, really.
Right.
And as it's grown, we have really decided that we need to make sure that we hone our attention and we put all these like amazing young people that we have in the Academy to use. So mm-hmm. when we was in Germany earlier this year, which was the first overseas trip for the Academy,
yeah.
We went to Hupfer and MKN. It was an amazing trip. And we had like 2-3 days all together as an Academy. I think there was around 20 of us who went on the trip.
Cool.
And the more time that we spent together, like chatting, socializing, we realized that we all had a lot of like common goals and a lot of common like thoughts and feelings on how we wanted to shape the Academy and also influence the industry that we're in to suit us and our like future working projection and how the industry is going to look in the future. So following that trip, a few of us, myself included, reached out to Adam and said we'd really like to kind of form a leadership team.
Makes
to
sense.
Guide the Academy.
Yeah.
And the idea is that we'll have like a few different groups with leaders for each group so that we can focus on numerous different targets.
Your leader and then also yourself. Justin, yes. You're also, yeah. How many is there? Leaders?
I think there's eight.
Yeah.
Eight. Okay. Eight leaders. Yeah. So we're going to be able to cover like sustainability, future events, social media, apprenticeships, like a real range of topics so that we're not at any one time just working towards one goal. We're able to actively work towards multiple goals.
I think for new people coming in, we have, and I'll touch on that in a minute, you know, a number of our team on the Academy. And there are some in there, like one of our colleagues has 2 years experience, 2 years into the industry. So actually joining the Academy, but having that direction the senior leadership team can give mm-hmm. is really, really important, I think, to, again, kind of younger people coming through. And I think that's something you and Justin and everybody can offer them.
Yeah,
certainly
definitely.
An opportunity I didn't have.
Sort of bringing the younger people through and into the industry so they understand it, I guess, the wider.
Yeah,
and I think you can kind of work in a vacuum a little bit, can't you? And you kind of don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so special about the industry, because even though there are, you know, other industries who have like a young person's association in some form or another, with the Cedar Academy, so we can literally shape our own future. And that's an amazing, you know, thing to be able
it's one of those industries, isn't it? And you'll understand this, Robert, as well. And I think we have the... you either kind of fall into it by accident, or you know someone who's in it, or, or your parents in it, and 27 years later you find yourself still working in it with no real idea of what opportunities are available. And I think the great thing about the Academy and what it's doing now is that the people coming in are seeing different opportunities that are available. So they might join a business as an operations assistant and not really know what's going on, what the industry is, what it's about. But the Academy gives that opportunity to see how they can perhaps focus their career into sales, project management, operations, engineering, design. And I just, it can only be a good thing moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Justin, what does it mean to you, the Academy, and how has it helped you develop in the sector?
So the Academy means a lot to me. I'm fully invested in that. I feel like we've built a community of like-minded professionals with access to industry mentors, resources, and of course, each other. I've been given opportunities to help develop the Cedar 4 service app. And with that, I might get cancelled for this, but prior to developing it, I reached out to a few manufacturers. Some of them come back with after-sales support for technicians. And some of them completely ignored that.
So what is that app?
It's an app designed for after-sale support for engineers on the road, on the tools.
Okay. To so access things like spare parts.
Technical manuals, spare parts.
Okay.
Online calculators. So we've got a kilowatt conversion. We have a water hardness now for project managers.
Yeah.
And they can physically input the postcode for the area. Wow. And we give them a guide.
Can we get access to that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that. That's great. That's a great development. That's something that you within the Academy have been developing for Cedar.
Absolutely. It's an opportunity I was given over. I sort of pitched it over to Cedar. I say pitch it. I was sort of forced it down their throat. I emailed over and said, look, this is what I've got. This is the plan. Other industries have got this. We have nothing like this at all. It's a tool we must have.
Right. Okay.
And then we sort of, and it snowballed and got bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And now I think we've had maybe 300 members sign up to it. And cool. It's readily available for...
I guess that wouldn't have come around without the Academy, because obviously you were the brainchild of that idea, if you like. So there's a win for the Academy and for the distributors and for you as well, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
So, Claire, I mean, as an employer, you've touched on it there, but what does it kind of mean to you, the Academy? Obviously, Kate is actively involved. How long is she away from you in the business? Does that worry you? Or, you know,
Not at all. I think we've seen it. I mean, we've had previous team members in the Academy, but I think when it was in its very early stages and perhaps not what it is now, when Kate joined us earlier in the year, we kind of had a conversation about the benefits of the Academy. And straight away, we decided, I think, a conversation between us that we'd bring some more of our team on board.
Okay.
So we're in quite an unusual position at the minute within the industry, as it were, is that a third of our business are under 30.
What, in your business?
At our business. Oh, okay. Very unusual.
Yeah.
60% of that third are on the Academy and 100% of those are female.
Wow.
And for me,
stats there.
Amazing stats, reverse that.
Girl power.
Exactly. Look at it.
For me, as somebody who's been in the industry for a long time, it's so important to kind of govern change. And that's what the Academy is doing in terms of diversity, in terms of learning skills. Yes, I mean, it did mean we had all three of you went to Germany.
Yeah.
So that was three people out of our business for 3 days. Mm. We're a small business.
So it's a big investment.
It's a big investment. Not only, you know, time, money, everything, but I feel it's beneficial because I wish I'd had those learning experiences in my early career.
Yeah.
Because you don't learn from a desk, you learn from hands-on experience. So the Cedar Academy offers that with the trips that it's doing. Again, conference, our team, one of our team were on annual leave, but the others in the Academy came to the conference all of the time. They got to mingle with their peers, colleagues, associates, and it's, to me, it can only be a benefit. Like I say, I'm not someone who believes that you develop your career being stuck behind a desk.
No.
So for me, it's.
I also think it makes their jobs more interesting, I guess, because obviously you as a director, you're out and about.
Yeah.
You know.
And as well, the Academy really solidifies your place in the industry,
completely.
Because I think especially with newer people who join the industry, when they're actively involved and they can see young people around them who are doing really well, doing a load of different departments, whether it's design, marketing, engineering, project management, anything you can think of, to go into CEDA conferences where you can see the, you know, the veterans of the industry who have been in the industry for decades and have such a wealth of experience and have gone completely through the ranks. And
I see Claire smiling. Yeah.
You know, this whole birthday vibe, right?
I don't need to be a veteran yet. I'm a veteran as well.
Oh my days.
Yeah. But I just think seeing those people around you and either being able to learn from people who have the decades of experience, or if you're newer and a bit more intimidated, maybe a bit more shy, you can talk to people your own age who might also not have a lot of experience and learn more about the industry in a really comfortable environment when everyone's really friendly. Like, a lot of us have each other on social media, we ring each other for chats to catch up, just, you know, socially.
I hate to ask this question, but I'm going to ask. I mean, is an upper or lower? I mean, I guess 18, I guess, any, what's that age coming in? And is an upper age or not so really? Is
previously, there was a 30 age limit.
Right.
I'm very close to 30. So, yep. But thankfully, they've pushed that back now because their idea is.
I was just thinking of some people who were late 20s who actually could benefit from this. I'm thinking,
yeah,
in mind, like,
exactly,
know.
Because yeah, obviously some people who are new in the industry, they may not necessarily be under 30, even yeah, though they're new to the industry. So the academy now is really focused on just helping people who
all
who
ages
want to, yeah, who,
so you could
want
be any age if you're new, basically, if you're kind of newish or yeah
or, and it's nice as well with the senior leadership team now. There's a bit of a bridge between the academy and the board team. So even within the academy, you've got something to strive for as well. And then when you do feel like you've had enough from the academy and you've taken the experience as far as you want to, then you can look at being more heavily involved at the CEDA board level, I would say.
So I think that's something I'm looking forward to as the next kind of few weeks, months progress after next week, is looking how my involvement with the board can interact with the academy as well.
Yeah.
So, and again, let's watch the space. We don't know how that looks at this minute. So I think it's just, yeah, rolling.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's really key for the academy to have to talk to the board and, you know, say this is what we need, this is what we want, or give ideas, or like you did, really, with the app, Justin.
Like a platform just to go for.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll ask all of you, but for maybe start with you, Justin. What do you think is like the biggest challenge for the food service equipment sector at the moment and coming up?
So I think currently and upcoming is always going to be recruitment. We have an endless pit of untapped career potential in our industry we don't actually reach for.
Yeah.
I'm going to steal the next part from a friend, but every year the UK is short of around 60,000 skilled engineers. That's a figure they've got.
Okay.
What is the shortage in our sector? We don't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
UK-wide.
Yeah.
How much vacancies for engineers is there in our sector? We don't have that. As soon as we have that information, we can go out and do a recruitment campaign and say, we have 10,000 open opportunities for engineers, and then drive for that.
Yeah. And I guess as well, with the shortage of, I mean, anything, obviously shortage of supply, it obviously increases, which is not a bad thing, increasing wages, but also you've got to be careful it doesn't increase them out of proportion with other people in the sector, because that obviously has an impact on the end customer.
I mean, the salary rates at the moment for engineers are through the roof.
Right.
And I think even
the competition must be massive.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's people coming with ridiculous fees for that. It's not just engineers, though. I think it's unfair to say it's just like an engineer thing. I think hospitality, we're shortfall as well. Mm-hmm. Even sales projects, we're struggling for project managers, designers. We need to tap into hospitality and sort of find a direct gateway for open opportunities. So you could potentially go to a hospitality restaurant, work in there for a few years, gather that experience, and then come through and pick out and say, it doesn't just stop at hospitality, we've got careers in commercial catering as well.
Yeah.
You can become an engineer, sales, design.
Yeah. And I think, well, that's it. I think a lot of people, but I'm a chef by trade, so that's kind of exactly it, isn't it? People come from the hospitality sector and then they move over
to the dark side, maybe.
Yeah, oh, my dad was a chef. Exactly. My dad was a chef, then got into design. Then, like I said, I got dragged up through it. That's how it happens.
What's your view, Claire, on kind of like the biggest challenges and things in the food service sector?
It's twofold for me, really. I completely, wholeheartedly agree with Justin, and that's a conversation we were all having. Recruitment is really difficult, really, really difficult. And there's a shortage of talented people coming in, and hopefully the academy will help with that. And it's how you get that message across to people, schools, universities, colleges, that there are these career opportunities available. So I do see that, because nobody is set at school thinking, I want to go and work for a dishwasher manufacturer. It's not exactly kind of up there, is it, with aspirational careers?
But nothing wrong with it, though.
Some big money's been earned, actually.
But
there's all these, you know, I think it's the recruitment side, whether that's design, engineering, manufacturing, is going to be a problem if we don't get that out there. And for me, still, I think there's been a huge shift, but there's a serious lack of diversity still within our industry.
Yeah.
A massive lack. As I said with those figures before, we are an incredibly female-heavy business. We're over two-thirds female, I think, which is really, really unusual.
Which is great.
And it's great.
But when you go to exhibitions or the conferences or whatever, it's kind of, I don't know what it is, but it's 90-95% male.
And that is something I think is going to be a challenge. I think we're overcoming it. I think when you saw at the conference this year, the mix with the academy and how that was split compared to, I guess, my peer group and how that was split, there was a big difference in what you could see there. And I think, and it's an interesting conversation we've had, and I've also had with other people within the sector, is I think the tone of voice we use needs to change as well as these kind of new people come into the industry. And that may be a challenge, but it's all a work in progress.
Yeah. But I think females bring a different dynamic, don't they? I mean, you know, as you know, my sister's in the sector, as you know very well. And so I've seen that whole story and journey, and it is a challenge.
It's a massive change, though, I think, now from where I'd always be going to exhibitions probably on my own or with male colleagues, I now go with Kate and Sam and Amy, and it's really nice to have that kind of dynamic in. But I think it's a challenge the industry's facing, but I think it's one we can overcome.
And it's changing.
Yes.
It is changing. Yes, I'm seeing
definitely.
It. Kate, what's your kind of view about those things and others? Or
entirely agree with both points being made. I also think challenge-wise, technology advances we need to be careful with, make sure we're knowledge sharing a lot. So like AI advances, for example, the FEA did a great article the other day about cybersecurity risks that are posed now with AI and the idea of a completely like connected kitchen. So from a manufacturer point of view, and also from consultancy side, as we both do, making sure that we're really up to speed on like the best advice that we can give to our end users to make sure we're not putting anyone at risk. So I think as an industry, make sure we keep knowledge sharing, as technology keeps improving, as AI keeps coming to the forefront of projects more and more, just to make sure that we're all connected. And knowledge is power. So
and you're right, because obviously we're seeing attacks and other countries and or other places. It's a new kind of warfare, if you like. So that puts people at risk, doesn't it? If you're connected, you could potentially take out a whole airport's catering or whatever that is, a hospital or something serious. Claire, I mean, if young people are listening to this show, hopefully they are, we've got some good listeners, why should they join the academy, and what's in it for them, basically?
What's in it for them?
I know
them?
We kind of covered it, but yeah.
Yeah, I think, again, just it's just such a great industry to work in. I think we'd all agree that. There's nothing like hospitality, is there? It's the best, and I think there's nothing like hospitality design or this side of the business. And I think for young people, and I'm sure, I mean, I'll give an example, and I hope she doesn't mind, Amy, who works for us. I haven't okayed this with her, but I'm hoping she's fine with it. Amy joined us just over a year ago from out of the industry. She completely was in the prison service, completely separate. And she came to us as an operations manager, didn't really know what the industry was, and we've joined her the academy, and I would say in 12 months, and I guess you guys would agree, she's fully embraced it. She's learning, she knows manufacturing, she does our estimating, she wants to learn, she wants to help with the marketing, the social media, and she's just become like all engrossed in it. It's become like something she wants to do for her career path. And I think that's what the academy will do for people. And I'd urge any employers who kind of are thinking about it, like, oh, what time is it going to take up? What benefit is for me? It's actually, the benefit for me is I've got a team who've got passion. I've got a team who feel valued.
Yeah.
Engaged.
And engaged. Yeah. And can also, it's that next layer within the business. It's that succession. It's, it's kind of having people bring me knowledge that I don't know about, bring our senior team knowledge they don't know about. And that's, to any young people thinking, what benefit is there to me? Knowledge is power, like you say, and that's exactly what the academy is doing for people. And
it retains your staff as well, I guess, for you, because if staff are bored, they'll just go somewhere else.
Yeah. we were chatting earlier, and you know, you'll probably remember Dial Up Radford as well, like I do. But when I first went into the industry, my learning was looking on Yale.com and literally if somebody dropped a brochure off, reading through it, and that was it. And I think having an association you can be part of and make friends and make kind of peers with and just learn is can't be anything but a good thing.
I see the academy sort of broadens its outreach, and you touched on it about colleges, universities, schools. Do you see that out? Is there a plan for that kind of outreach work to be, or is it happening, that outreach work to go on, to go to those colleges, those schools, and say, hey, this is our sector?
There is a plan for it. That's hopefully one of the agendas for the leadership groups.
Okay.
So we're going to attend colleges, universities, the open days, do career talks. We've got fantastic ambassadors at CEDA in the academy. And we can have the team from sales, projects, business support, and even technicians now. And we want commercial catering career stands at intakes up and down the country.
Yeah.
It is exciting to think that in 5 years' time, where are we going to be with this?
Yeah, exactly. And that leads into, well, my next question actually to you, Claire. Where other associations, you know, FEA or other bodies, what can they do to support you? And do you need that support or what?
Yeah, I think, again, we were having this conversation earlier about where we could interact with other industry associations. So the Hospitality Network, for example. Yeah. Is cross-board. You have architects, designers, restaurateurs, hoteliers, construction. Actually, bringing CEDA on board with that is an opportunity to perhaps get people on board from different parts of the industry, or just to people to grow networks. Also, things like the Association of Catering Excellence, where they have been predominantly client side, but again, young chefs, etc. We spoke about perhaps people looking for changes in career. That's a good kind of link. And we also said earlier, just having more of a presence at perhaps some industry events, HRC, for example, Commercial Kitchen, CEDA's there, but having the academy there in a bigger presence, I think, and getting that engagement across.
Because I've got to be honest, and Adam will kill me for this on Monday, but I didn't actually know about the academy until he told me about it.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? I didn't. Yeah. That's just being honest. And then obviously I've learned all about it. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of people that don't know, probably. Maybe I'm out of time there, but yeah.
No, I don't disagree. I think having, you know, Kate really pushed it. When I knew about it before, but when Kate joined us, it was something she really pushed and really advocated. And hence why, like I said, we have other team members on it. But I think having the academy get exposure is being part of these wider industry events, and almost having you guys really be there to talk the talk. And at HRC, for example, or something, you're there reaching people like us who can go, actually, that's a real benefit to our business.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Kate, have you had any sort of professional setbacks or unexpected dilemmas since joining the academy, specifically about the academy?
To be honest, I I'm very lucky, I imagine. I would say professional setbacks or dilemmas from the academy, definitely not. My biggest hurdle from being in the academy was probably when I originally joined in 2021. So yeah. It was like very like fresh out of COVID. Myself, along with everybody else, had been very isolated throughout COVID. And then I went to an event where I was the only person from my company going and was kind of forced to mix immediately and chat to people, not just from the academy, but a range of people. But as soon as I started talking to people, like I was just instantly relaxed and happy and laughing with them. So yeah, it's just a great, you know, it can be quite nerve-wracking a little bit, I suppose, yeah, when course. You first yeah. join the academy, course, especially yeah. if you know
like
that there's
school.
Yeah and yeah, you want to fit in, you want to yeah. find your friends there, don't you? So I think when you first join, you know, there might be a little bit of anxiety around that, but we all get on so well. We all gravitate to each other at events and, you know, catch up, and everybody's so friendly and they just want to get to know you and chat a bit about what you do and what you're interested in. So, yeah.
That's positive. And yeah. Justin, about any, for you, any sort of dilemmas?
So it's the same point Kate made earlier about the 50 members. I wouldn't say a setback, but maybe a challenge.
Yep.
With so the academy now has 50 members, as Kate said earlier. With that, we need to set structure and to keep on top of getting everyone involved in that and
yep.
not taking too much of the employees' time.
Mm-hmm.
And then also setting the trends rather than just keeping up with them.
Yeah. So being ahead of
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Well, is there a next trip lined up, or what's the next sort of thing you've got coming down the line?
So this probably an exclusive. We're in talks at the moment with SAFESA, again, a service association in America, and we're planning for an up and down sort of trip with their young person group, I think they call them over there.
Yeah.
And we're going to visit CEDA member companies and physically show them this is what we do over here. How can we collaborate?
Right, okay. So they're going to come here?
Yes.
Are you going to go there or? Well, like exchange?
We'll put the invite out there.
Yeah. I did one of them when I was 15, like an exchange to Sweden. I went to Sweden for 6 weeks and Johan came here for 6 weeks.
How did it go?
It was good. I actually didn't do anything in Sweden apart from eat. But yeah, it was great. So, Kate, maybe you can pick up on this. Is there any specific milestones coming up with the academy or anything that you want to let our listeners know about? I know we touched on the US kind of exchange thing or whatever that is going to be, yeah?
Yeah, we have our first senior leadership team week after next. That's our first meeting with the senior leadership. So from there, we will kind of divvy up our responsibilities and set the agenda for the next 12 months. We'll review like a multiple year plan as well to make sure that we're looking at the bigger picture. And me personally within the academy, my biggest goal is just to spread the awareness more, get us bit more visible on social media. I think it would be great for us to have an academy social media where we're not just posting like the big event, the big work events that happen,
yeah.
but just more like a candid like day to day where everybody in the academy can pitch in. So you could look on the Instagram or whatever social media we go for, and you could see like an array of different departments and what your day could possibly look like if you joined the industry.
Yeah. Okay. So just as we start to wrap up this part of the podcast, is there any like interesting stories or little snippets you can give our listeners?
Yeah. So just to re-emphasize how amazing CEDA is and the people within it, there was a semi-viral post on LinkedIn. I think it was viral for LinkedIn.
Okay.
Where someone in CEDA actually did a big rant about coming out of their degree for design. They finished their placement in COVID and they had no employers taking them on. And
right.
said, how can she gather work experience when no one's willing to give her that experience? And a lovely story from that is Adam messaged her privately and said, have you considered the commercial catering trade?
Yeah.
And then from that, she was employed by a CEDA member.
Wow, okay. And then she got a job and
And now she's still in the sector this day, I think 4 years on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing.
So it's a good story. It's a force for good. So kind of moving away now from the CEDA Academy, as a tradition in this series, the guest of this episode asked the guest of the next episode the first question. Now, Claire, I know you know who's coming on.
I do.
The next episode. What question have you got lined up for my guest?
So my question is, you've had a very diverse career spanning a number of different sectors. You have also had many professional and personal achievements over your career. What are your top three highlights, excluding winning National Chef of the Year? And what advice would you give to somebody wanting to begin their career in the hospitality industry?
Great. Well, that's a really good question. I will ask him, and it's a he, so we'll see what he says.
Excellent. I look forward to hearing.
Well, a big thank you to Kate, Justin and Claire for taking the time to be on the show on this rainy day and obviously on Claire's birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday again.
Beautiful flowers.
Happy birthday.
It's been great to learn all about CEDA, the CEDA Academy, and give that a little bit more exposure. And hopefully from this, some of the listeners will be in touch, hopefully.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
That concludes this episode of Kitchen Curiosity. It's been fantastic to hear from Adam, Kate, Justin and Claire all about CEDA and the CEDA Academy. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. If you've got any specific questions for our future guests or anything you'd like me to cover on the show, please drop me an email on radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. On the next episode, we're remaining in the capital. I'm joined by award-winning chef whose mantra is, "The only limitations are those that you set yourself." He's responsible for an array of prestigious events, including the Lord Mayor's dinner and hosting Her Majesty the late Queen. He's won National Chef of the Year and pushes the limits and thinks outside the box, even when not in the kitchen. I'm also joined by the Montgomery Group, who are the UK's longest running independent events organisers, and we'll be discussing UK Trade Show's HRC in detail, which is the UK's leading trade event for hospitality and food service sectors. Click subscribe to follow us. You've got a moment. Rate the podcast. The next episode comes out on the 7th of October. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.